Devin and Morgana have been celebrating midlife love by getting married 100 times in 100 countries. They believe grown-up love gets better and more fun, especially for women. Everyone's smarter, wiser. Men are more relationship ready. And if they're not, it's obvious. Forget anything you were told about being too old or too late for love and adventure. Instead, get fresh new tips on dating, relating, and travel to exotic destinations. And best of all, call in for personal guidance, creating crazy, sexy midlife love in your life.
Hello and welcome. This is Morgana, and I'm here with my husband, Devin.
I'm still here.
Yes, you are. Devin has a new addition to the family.
Oh, and it's an important addition.
Yeah.
It showed up in a box.
You've been pregnant with this project for quite a while.
It's true. I woke up one morning and I knew it was coming.
And
I bought a mandolin. Like, I needed an extra guitar. It's not a guitar, so I can rationalize it.
Exactly.
And it's beautiful. I'm gonna play banjo and mandolin and have country music surrounding me at all times.
And you're so funny about it because you're always, Morgana, I have some good news and I have some bad news. And you're trying to butter me up as if you're going to get any pushback from me, that you're going to get another instrument.
Well, I keep telling myself that you'll have a limit of instruments.
And you're testing it, right?
Right. So I'm testing it out. So it's like I want to see where we're at and sort of this big picture, this grand scheme of what it is that I'm doing. And I'm pretty sure that at some point you'll say, oh, okay, that's enough. That's ridiculous.
Like when you say, okay, that's enough about my cats.
Yeah, I guess I don't care. You can have as many cats as you want. And I'm going to push that to the extreme with guitars, mandolins, and banjos.
Yeah.
And by the way, I have a keyboard in the garage. And that's looking tempting.
Okay.
That means I won't buy a new one. That just means I may need to figure out a place to put it.
Honestly, hearing your music is really, really nice. I may draw the line at a drum set.
That's a problem because I do have some bongos in the garage as well.
Oh,
so they need a home.
Yeah.
You know, well, we'll work on it. And I was actually thinking while you were just discussing sort of like your ease with like, okay, yeah, I'm rolling with his knuckleheadedness. And I mean, I think that's sort of the middle life thing. It's like, well, I'm going to go have a mandolin. I think in different times of my life, I would have said, oh, what am I doing? And now it's just like, hey, I'm at a place in life where there's enough chaos and enough craziness going on where it's like, you know what? I'm going to enjoy myself and be of service in the universe in the grand scheme. And then I'm going to come back and work on mandolin some more.
Well, especially this year, it keeps you home, it keeps you safe, you make beautiful music. And one of the things that I learned before our relationship is never get between a man and his hobbies. You know, just, you have your wrestling, you have your Cobra Kai, you have your music, you have your books. That is your life, that is your happy place.
But when you say wrestling, you're thinking fighting.
Whatever that
Yeah,
awful
that's
stuff
mixed,
is that you watch.
Mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just fighting in the street.
Yeah.
But there is, I think there's just a boyness about me.
Yeah,
and
there
so,
is. I like
you
it.
You know, screaming guitars, right? Cobra Kai, my wife brought up that. I have to say, I watched that show. I've binged watched it multiple times. And so it's fighting and camp. And sort of ironic,
yeah.
Yes. And there's a ridiculous story arc going on as well. So life is good this week, even though we are a little bit...
Even though we're like carrying air purifiers from room to room with us.
Well,
and I'm grateful. I'm so grateful. Our neighborhood's not on fire. Devin caught a utility pole that was sparking and SoCal Edison was here in a heartbeat. So... you know, disaster averted, and we're just super duper grateful and sending out like oodles and oodles of prayers to the people affected.
And as another sort of like great life, midlife thing is that at some point you, when you are an adult, you have friends who do things that are useful. And then we do things for each other. So part of the reason why we caught that, we did, well, apparently we had all kinds of loose wires and sparking transformers on the pole that they were like, no, stay inside. Don't go out and look because it might explode. So I had.
Oh, you didn't tell me that part.
Well, why would I? I can tell you in the after.
Okay.
The aftermath, but not in the during, because I knew you were just going to stay where you were. But so I had a buddy of mine come out who knows this stuff and took a quick look. And he was like, well,
it wasn't that quick. He has this camera that does infrared and all sorts of.
Right. Well, because it's serious stuff.
He's a real electrician.
Oh, yeah. No. This wasn't. I was just calling some random guy who owns a screwdriver. I own a screwdriver.
Yeah.
But for the real things, you need to get sort of like a real person. But it's nice to have somebody sort of like in your or in your circle of friends.
Always have a lawyer, a doctor, an electrician, and a plumber.
Well, and truthfully, I have most of those things. And I'm going to tell a story because I think this is almost like a perfect lead-in to our guest this week.
Oh, I have my own, but go ahead.
Okay, well, you can give yours too. But so mine is that not only do I have this circle of friends who, you know, could, you know, fix a car and know when a transformer is about to explode, but when I was dating and it started to get serious, I had no, you know, at some point, you know, when you're involved in another person, there's a point, and I don't know where the tipping point exists, but the tipping point happens, and all of a sudden you're emotionally invested. And all of a sudden, my brain is not working with the detached calm I might normally. And so when I was dating my lovely wife, and we were still fairly new, we were like a few months in, and I was like, uh-oh, I think I'm in trouble. I invited three female friends who would be absolutely objective.
And ruthless.
And potentially, yeah, totally ruthless. about like, okay, what do I got here? You know, talk to me, reason things out. And so I brought this. So we had sort of like a five-person date, four of whom were on my team. Me is included on my team. And you were, I'm sure, on my team. But that guest.
I had no idea.
That guest is
that
our
I was
guest
being auditioned.
Today.
Well, I probably did know I was being auditioned.
You might. Well, it wasn't so much an audition. I mean, I was already sort of like, hey, I think this is going well.
I was happy to just meet your friends.
Right. And so that was it. But yes, it was to some degree, hey, ladies, come out and help me figure this out. And they were all, and they were actually women when I was going through a previous breakup, they were like, they were on my team. And I love that.
Well, you told me about one of them before I'd ever met her, that when your prior to me live-in fiance walked out on you 6 months before you met me and you were devastated, that you had one friend, who, female friend, who said, I am going to punch her in the face. And I thought, that is weird. But this lady loves Devin. So I just really liked her instantly. And she was one of those three women.
She was one of those three women. And so there's so many things to say about her. As a matter of fact, I think you have sort of like a bio that we should read, because
well,
I would just say all kinds of ridiculous
not so much a bio. I just, because I know her personally through you and to have become friends with her over the years. She is founder of the LA Derby Dolls.
Right. Super rock star.
Yeah. She's a LA Fire Department commissioner. She met her husband. She married her husband after only 2 months of dating. We were at the wedding.
Right. We were.
We had very low expectations for the duration of that marriage.
Well, I mean, listen, you support your friends.
Totally. We loved her, but it was.
On paper. On paper, it was like, okay, let's mull this over.
It worked out really, really well.
It worked out really well. She picked a great guy. He is a great guy. And I think they make a spectacular couple.
And one of the reasons I invited her, not only are you going to find out she's just a load of fun, like, you know, somebody who brings like roller derby back to LA is going to be an interesting person.
Right.
But I've been seeing this stuff on social media lately along the lines of, I am never getting married because I don't want to give up my freedom, or I'm not going to be controlled. And they're giving all these examples of like really bad marriages where women aren't allowed to be themselves. And so that's why we have Rebecca as exhibit one to counter all of
Rebecca
that. Rebecca
Demolicious Nindberg.
Nindberg,
Welcome to Crazy
welcome.
Sex Midlife Love.
So,
What
Welcome to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love, my dear friend.
Oh, I know. Welcome.
And my confidant and pal.
Oh, I know. You
I
kids
know. And
are fabulous and so inspiring, quite
yes,
honestly.
you
I
are.
love to brag. I love to brag about my friends who've gotten married, what is it, 25 times now? 30 times?
25. So,
35
and
times
counting,
in.
yeah.
I mean, it's extraordinary. It's extraordinary. So it's just been such, it's really been a joy to watch you two grow as a couple and really kind of take life by the horns and just wring it dry as much as you can.
Yeah, and honestly, we're still trying to figure it out. So, where do we start with you? Do you tell us about you? This is odd because you're.
Here's where I would like to start, because there are just so many really fun things to dive into, and we'll go where we go. But can you talk about leading up to meeting your husband? Because I think that that's a funny story. I mean, you had basically said, I'm never going to date anybody like that right before you dated him and then married him 2 months later.
Let's get one thing straight. It was 14 weeks,
Oh, well,
not 2 months.
that makes all the difference.
I'm just saying, like,
Yeah.
percentage-wise, that tacks on a lot.
Right, no, that's like an extra 60%. Well done.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you. So, yeah, it was insane. It was actually insane. But I was 43 when I met my husband, and it was, I've been online dating, quite honestly. Let's go back. Like, I was online dating before there was online dating. Like, I remember I was 23 and I put an ad in the back of the LA Weekly. My friend and I did. It was super fun and kind of crazy, and I had like some really great experiences. And I wasn't averse to online dating. I wasn't averse to meeting strangers because, quite honestly, like, where was I gonna meet people? Before I did roller derby, I was a sculptor, and I wasn't gonna go out with people I worked with. And then I'm only working, with roller derby girls. I'm certainly not going to go out with people I work with. And so I didn't really have the opportunity to meet people, and online was the best way to do so. And it was a literal pile of garbage, I will say, like, for a long time. There were, I mean, it's like, it's really great. And I always kept telling myself, you only need one. You only need one. And that's what I tell all my friends now. I'm like, you only need one. And Gavin was always like, oh my God, there's a lot of duds out there. That's Gavin's word,
Well, there
duds.
are a lot of duds, and there's nothing we can do about it. But you're right. So now, when I started online dating, I had no intentions or expectations of any of this stuff other than telling the universe that I am open to the prospect of a relationship. Did you actually think at the time that when you were doing online dating that you could then actually find sort of like through all of the duds, sort of the love of your life? And how did you expect that? I mean, did you envision how that might unfold?
No, I think I thought that I was just going to keep trying. this is what I thought. I thought, I didn't know if I would meet the love of my life, quite honestly, but I thought, well, there's people like me out there, and I'm doing this. So
and you're cool.
Right, like my equivalent should be out there too. And I didn't know my expectation, you know, it gets frustrating. You start taking it personally. I don't know if we live in a culture that's difficult for women. And so it gets discouraging, but I just kept trying and trying. And I mean, really, quite not, like, what else was I going to do? You know, I had no place else to meet somebody. And then I didn't even want to go out with my husband at first because of my own personal prejudices. Even though I'm Jewish, he is Israeli. And I was like, oh, no, I've met Israelis. They're all aggressive and I'm not going to deal with that. But my little sister was like, oh, he looks so nice. I'm like, yeah, he looks nice. And he changed his age to contact me. And he said that was the first thing he said. I changed my age to contact you. This is my age. Is that okay? And I was like, oh, that's nice. And yeah, and I didn't expect even that he would be, you know, the love of my life. And as it turned out, you know, when I first met, well, there's a little bit of a story where he actually did act very aggressive for a little
the good news is we had time.
He was in the middle of something, he couldn't take my call. And I was like, never mind. And then, but you know, you just don't give up. He called me 3 times. I wasn't going to pick up. And he called me the 3rd time. I thought, you know what? He is trying. And I picked up. Had I not picked up, I would not have the life I have today.
And you have a great,
you know,
life.
It's so easy to dismiss entire human beings because of one mistake or one thing in particular, you know, something that happens that's negative. But if I hadn't picked it up that 3rd time and they said 3, you know, and to find out that we worked on the same kibbutz in Israel, 10 years apart, and that we knew some of the same people, you know, literally the other side of the planet.
Wow.
I wouldn't have known. And then I, you know, and then when he turned around, you know, I met him at a cafe and I was like, David? And he turned around and I was like, oh, yeah.
Was there,
he basically moved in a week after.
So, but was it sort of like when he turns around, did you have the, oh my gosh, he's a babe? Or was it, oh my gosh, this is real. Was it, do you know what I mean? Was it that visceral, attractive thing? Or was there like, you know, like I have a buddy and I've brought this up a million times who was literally in line at the bank. He turned around and he thought to himself, I'm going to marry her. And he did. And now they have two kids. Been together for whatever, you know, 16, 18 years or something like that. Was that your experience?
No, when he turned around, I was like, oh, he's hot. I wasn't like, this is a lifer. Although I did think it was very intriguing that we had a shared past. So I thought, well, the universe clearly wanted us to meet, right? And so, it didn't take long after that until I thought, you know what? This is real. This is real.
So how long did it take?
I kind of bowled over.
How long?
I mean, I got offline within a week.
Really? Okay.
Well, he did move in. That is polite when somebody is living with you.
Wasn't it official? I remember.
He didn't actually technically move in. He just never left my apartment. But yeah, it was, you know, look, I will say that and I tell my friends this all the time, do not give up. Keep trying. If this is what you want, right? And this is far greater than anything I would have even hoped for. This is my first marriage. I'm 43. I didn't do a lot of dating online. I wasn't interested in dating. So I just didn't go out. I was like, thank you very much, but no. And this sort of happened. I was like, oh, wow. So it's been pretty great, I will say.
He is such a sweetie.
He's very sweet. And I'll say that another thing is that because he had been divorced, he had gone through a lot of self-reflection, had grown as a human being, and really kind of explored all aspects of his humanity, his flaws, his shortcomings, and kind of had a little bit more of a grasp on it, you know, and was able to articulate his feelings and articulate what he wanted out of a relationship,
mm-hmm.
which I had not experienced really before.
Dating also, like, grown up is so much better, isn't it?
Yeah, I've dated a lot. Devin thought. Devin, you met some of my priors.
I have, and I can't remember anything about them at all. When was the moment? What was the moment where you were just like, this is my guy? Was there a thing that happened? I mean, obviously you moved in within a week, but I mean, was there some sort of a thing, like, you know, 6 months down the road where it was like, oh my gosh, even though I'm married to him, this is the guy?
I will say that, no, I knew within, I would say probably the first 2 months, 6 weeks, let's see, I met him beginning of May, so it was, yeah, by middle of July, so it was like, he was gone for a week, and it hurt, like it was a physical pain I experienced not being with him. And I had never experienced that before.
Was that before? Was that what prompted the marriage?
Yeah. Because he got a call from his mom from his dad that his mom was going to die. And he had an H-1B visa. And so I said, I can't handle him not being here for, it could have been 3 to 6 months. And I couldn't handle it.
Mm.
And I knew that that was going to cause some emotional trauma for me. And
yeah.
I was like, you know, what the heck?
Because you put together your wedding in something like a week. I mean, it was
quick.
Yeah.
We found out about it and it was happening like immediately.
Yeah. Thursday or something.
Yeah. My brother, I called my brother and I said, hey, I'm just going to, you know, I'm just letting you know I'm getting married. And, but like, you know, we're going to have a real wedding later. This is just, you know, we're definitely, you know, being, you know, going to stay married, but we'll actually have a wedding later. My brother lost his mind and said, there's 3 days in your life that are important. The day you're born, the day you get married, and the day you die. We're coming down. He's like, I can't believe you're talking about it so lightly. And like, I'm like, what is your problem? Like, relax. and then I'm like, it's just a marriage. And it's just a wedding. No, I wasn't planning on having like a, you know, it's just sort of a, I wanted like a civil service, you know, event. And then we're something at a courthouse, and then we go have a wedding later. And my brother was like, this is the day you're getting married. That's your wedding day. And he was adamant about it. And the entire family came down, my father included.
I remember Papalicious was there. So
Papalicious. Tonka was the ring boy. What?
It was a great wedding. Even your puppy was there.
I know. He was the ring boy.
Yeah, yes. No, Tonka was amazing. Yeah. Somehow you found a top hat for him and a bow tie and a tux. So I want to go back in time just for a moment, because were you the one who popped the question, or did you sort of like raise the concept? No, I'm curious only because it's like a rock star.
I'm laughing because I always say, oh, I'm like, oh God, do you remember that time when you proposed? And then I'm like, yeah, me either. Because I was like, because I said, you know, no, he was like, let's meet in Nepal, like maybe we'll take a trip in, you know, the meantime. And I just thought, I don't want to do that. I want you here, and I love you. And I said, we should just do it. And I convinced him.
So it was, not romantic, sort of.
No, it sounds, it sounds
romantic?
Totally romantic.
Is that? I don't know.
I have always thought of it as very practical, but it was based in some deep-seated love.
Right.
Well,
no,
here's what is so cool about it, is that all of it was on your terms. And I think I mentioned, we had a caller earlier on. I don't know if the caller is still there because we've been talking for so long. But no, you're the guest, you know, and we really wanted to bring you in, and I'm sure the caller is only here because of you. You know, you are such a perfect antidote to that idea that you have to give up your power and your voice when you get married. And so has that been the case for you?
Are you suggesting that Rebecca became a mouse or something?
The trans is shocking.
Yeah.
Mousy.
What's that?
No, we were just, I was just saying, yeah, Mousy Rebecca. Not so much. What would you say to any woman who's worried about that?
Well, look, you know, we all have, you'll find your counterpart. David wouldn't fit with a woman who was probably mousy, you know? I think we just fit really well. And all I would say is just don't compromise who you are to be with somebody. I mean, look, marriages, there are lots of compromises you will have to make inside of a marriage, but who you are, like, you never, ever have to compromise who you are or hide who you are or hide aspects of yourself. You know, like, this is, like, David actually, you know, I'm a flavor not a lot of men are into, you know what I'm saying? But for the most part, like, it's just been, well, it fits. We all are like single puzzle pieces, and you've got to find your puzzle piece, your other matching puzzle piece, but it matches you and all of who you are. And then when you are truly who you are, you'll find the person that truly fits you, which I was fortunate enough to do. So that's, and what's also really great is David's Israeli. And so, and he's not, you know, he wasn't like, didn't live here for a long time. So I'm basically his frame of reference for what an American female is. he has no frame of reference. Which is kind of amazing. I get a free pass. Yeah, that's all I got to say.
Okay, so marry a foreigner who has no other reference of what American women are like. Marry somebody who's been divorced and has, you know, had some wounds and has done his work on himself. Any other tips? Somebody who is smoking hot and tried three times to get you to respond.
And Oh, yeah. Well, that was actually after I called him, and he was like, I can't talk. I have to go. And I was like, whoa, well, that's not how that... He thought I was somebody else. Like, he was trying to... He was renting an apartment down in Venice at the time, and so he thought I was a mortgage, he thought I was a broker, and he had forgotten that I was supposed to call him, and then I was like, oh no, not picking up the phone after that. But I did, I ended up, but also I want to say, like, to the men out there, like, that they also shouldn't give up either, you know? So, I think it's important to really just continue, be forgiving, and you'll know when you know. People told me that all the time. I was like, ugh, you know, but it's actually true. I had no idea.
Well, that's the great thing about all the duds out there, is it makes the right person a lot easier to spot.
Oh, my God. Right, and then you're like, oh, you're not going anywhere. That's it. You're mine.
Yeah.
like what you did with Devin. You're like, oh, no. No, no, no. Like, I don't need to look at anybody else. Like, that's it. So,
yeah.
Because you know, like, Devin's a gem. I mean, you're a gem as well. And, like, and he knew that we knew that. So, all the women knew that. So.
Right. No, you told me. You told me it would be okay. That's what I remember.
Right. Don't mess it up.
Right. And after checking to make sure I was age appropriate.
Right. That was important.
Right.
The prior one, you know.
Right. Yes. Yes. Devin is such a good man.
Well, thank you. So can we ask you, and we'll probably return to love because that's what we love talking about.
But I just want to check, is the caller still on the line? Just asking our producer. And if so, we want to hear from the caller. And if not, we'll just keep talking. And I'm not hearing back from the producer.
Yeah, so I think I think we have silence from our producer who may be taking a nap or something like
okay.
that.
Oh, there he is. Okay.
We're clear.
All right.
So I want to know, and we've discussed this before, so of course, I'm going to enjoy hearing about it again, but how did you go from sculpting? And sculpting is sort of like an unusual place to begin with. But how did you get to the
solitary
most,
spirit, you know?
Right, you know, a giant ladder creating the thinker or something like that. But how did you move from that to, you know, being sort of, what is that?
Roller Derby Queen.
Roller Derby Queen. How did that manifest? Did you listen to a Jim Croce song?
That's not a natural path way?
Yeah, no, that seems...
You missed the memo, Devin.
Right, I missed the memo. Obvious segue between sculptor to roller derby queen. So, yeah, where does Demolicious come from? And where did that all happen?
So that Demolicious came from, I was in a demolition derby.
Of course you were.
You remember that, right?
I do, but I have to, you know.
What's a demolition derby?
It's where cars smash into each other, and the one that, like, and you basically... You basically keep smashing into each other, usually going in reverse, trying to hit somebody else's until their engine dies. And the last one standing wins, I don't know, what do you think, a keg of beer?
And a neck brace.
A neck brace? What happens there? So you're in a demolition derby.
Yeah, you knew that, right? You knew that.
Yeah, no, I know it, but I think it's a great story.
So you know what? No, you didn't. I didn't know you back then. Sorry. That's what I meant. No, because of course not, because that was 2002. That's how I got the name Demolicious. So it didn't come from roller derby. You know what? So You know what? Have you ever worked so hard for something? I mean, like, I worked my entire life from my first sculpting class, I said, okay, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. I love this. And I was completely obsessed. And that's all I did for years. And then I really wanted to get into the union because it offered an incredible pay, you know, great benefits, got to work on movies. And I just thought, oh, that'd be so fun. And so that was what I wanted to do. And then I got into the union and I was like, oh, is this all there is? Because it was like, oh, like I thought it was great and it was fun, but it just didn't feel like that my life had a lot of purpose at that point, you know?
That's so funny because I think last week or some prior show, Devin talked about exactly the same thing when he was in the editor union. I was in the actor union. Identical experience.
Really? Because,
yeah. Well, when I was in the film industry, I had literally to get into the film industry, I worked for basically this woman and her husband. The husband was the director of photography and she was the director, and they spent their own money to make this movie. And I could be the assistant editor, but I had to walk their dogs and change the toilet paper rolls out of their things and all kinds of like stuff like that. And it was basically they would pay me, but I had to write them a check in return. So it appeared as though, and I don't know if I'm giving away trade secrets, but in return, I could get billable hours so I could join the union. And I thought, you know, and I did. To even get to that point was like running through every single hoop that I could possibly find just so I could work walking somebody's dog. And, oh, and it was graveyard shift. It was like all of those kinds of things. It was just terrible.
Living the dream.
Right. Living the dream. And they weren't.
Yeah, exactly.
And they weren't nice on top of everything else. But I end up in the union and I end up bothering every human being I could find so I could get into the film industry. And I get on a gig and I get in the union and I'm working film after film. And I get on a great crew, like a group of people that was like, all I had to do is just stay in the crew and I would be working forever and it would all be good money and all that stuff. And there was a point where I was going to go on to Scream 4, I think it was. And it was like an upgrade. Uh-huh. It would have been an upgrade. And the director called me up and basically said, hey, we want you to do this. And it was almost normal because I was already within the crew. So it's just a matter of
right. We're
moving on to the next thing. And instead of saying yes, I said, let me call you back in an hour. And I don't know where that came from, but
wow.
It was like, and within the hour, a friend of mine called me up and said, hey, listen, I'm going to remodel my house myself. Do you know anybody who can swing a hammer? And I was like, how much are you paying? And it was literally within the hour. And I was like, I can do that. How much does it pay? And it was like nothing. And I thought about it and was like, I could do that. And literally I called up the guy and I gave away this really great, I mean, it was really a wonderful opportunity, but it was all of a sudden this realization that it was like, I worked so hard for it and I didn't care. And I think it was part because I had planned on, and maybe you can elaborate this in your own experience, is that I had assumed that when I'd get in the film industry, I'd work on The Wizard of Oz or Schindler's List or something incredible. And I wasn't. I was working on these movies. Right. It was like, I mean, did you have some sort of expectation in your thing? And then, of course, please, I want to know more about the Derby Dolls.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like Looney Tunes, live action. I mean, but I did do some cool stuff like Pirates of the Caribbean 2 and 3 and Minority Report and things like that. But I just thought, well, what am I? And most of the films, like I would be like, you know what? I would never even go see this film. And and I thought, you know, is this what I want my legacy to be? Is this what I want my life to be?
Mm-hmm. Great question.
That I'm, yeah, like, you know, and y'all, I've been thinking about, like, that is sort of the question I pose myself all the time is, you know, really at the end of my life, what are the things I'm going to be most proud of? And is this something that I would be proud of? And I think the answer to that was definitely no. I mean, it's great money. I also didn't like all the chemicals, and I was also one of four women in my union.
That must have been comfortable.
Yeah, being on the set, like me and 100 men. Yeah, maybe another woman. It was, you know, you kind of get used to it, and when you lay down the law at the beginning, like, you know, you can make sure. Look, there's always discrimination. There's, you know, sexism and whatnot, but I didn't get harassed. That happened once and it didn't happen again. I just thought, yeah, I want to do something more. I want to have an impact and I want to do the things I care about. And so, you know, so a friend of mine, she was a painter and I was a sculptor, and she came to work with roller skates, and they were roller derby brand. And I had incidentally, was looking for roller derby online. I couldn't find it. I found a school that had, you know, no longer existed. And I was like, oh my God, I was just online looking for roller derby. And she said, oh, I wanted to start a league 5 years ago. And I think just at that moment, that to me just seemed like the very best idea I had heard in a long time. And I said, okay, let's do that. That's what we're going to do. And that's what we did. Literally, it was just basically taking this idea and that we really had no business doing, you know, we had no, neither one of us really even knew how to skate well. Like, just like I could do the hokey pokey. And, and it was like, we had this opportunity to create a whole new culture and really just start creating an environment where it was women owned and run, that you got to break stereotypical norms and be celebrated for it. You know, like if you knock somebody down, you know, you got high five, you know, or if somebody knocked me down, and it was a good hit, you know, I'd be like, nice, that was good, you know, like, you didn't take it personally, it was just part of the game, and I, you know, if you don't know where to find your people, find something that you like to do, or something that you think is interesting, and put a post up, and you'll find your people. I had no idea who my people would be, and then all of a sudden, within the first Craigslist, I think we started on Craigslist and then put flyers up, we had 40 regulars. Within a couple of months, we had 40 regulars, and then it just grew and grew and grew really fast after that.
So
because
how did
these women were starving for this outlet and this community.
So I want to just describe, because I've been to the LA Derby Dolls with you, and it was amazing. Like, I think people who might be listening to this, and I think when you first described it to me, like, I saw roller derby as a kid and I actually loved it, but I think I had this picture in my mind of going to somebody's garage, and there would be four people in it, and they'd be wearing elbow pads, and they'd be beating up each other on roller skates. And when I went, there was, I mean, it was like a stadium. I mean, hundreds of people were in there. And the rink was like 10 feet off the ground. And I mean, everybody had uniforms and everybody knew how to skate. And so, and there was referees and scoreboard. And I mean, it was, and an announcer. And I mean, it was like a thing, which, you know, when you think about it, because there's a million steps between, huh, we should do roller derby, to all of that.
Right.
And so how, I mean, obviously there had to have been sort of like dark nights of the soul, but was there a particular, was there some point where it was like, no, we have to do this because of X, Y, and Z. I know this is hard, but we're doing it. How did that shape and occur? Because it's such an immense project.
Right. Well, yeah, I would get so overwhelmed. And these women that I, that are still some of my very closest friends to this day, one in particular, Eve Lee, oh, I'd get overwhelmed. I'd be like, I can't do it. You know, you just, you, it, it is up, swimming upstream, you know, establishing an all-female sport. And she would just tell me all the time, okay, how do you eat an elephant? And I'd be in tears. Oh my God. We got shut down, you know. We got in the middle of a game. We, you know, all kinds of things happened. And I was like, and I think, oh, anyway, it's one bite at a time. But I think that the idea that when you're, when you see what this community does for people, like my sense of responsibility to these women and then young girls, when we started our juniors program, was huge. And that's what gave me purpose. The purpose was seeing how women and young girls transformed how they saw themselves in the world and what they could do, and how it changed the trajectory of a lot of these women's lives. And I felt personally responsible for that. And so no matter how dark things were, my happiness or my fear or whatever issue I was going through, my responsibility trumps all of that. Their experience, this community, was far greater than anything, any of my personal crises. So I just continued on. And I was also supported by so many women who just kept saying, no, please do it. Please do it. You know, it seems dark now, but you got to keep going. You got to keep going. We got shut down so much. I mean, like, are we had, you know, so many issues where we had to move, and moving an arena is not easy, and multiple times. And they just, I learned so much from these women and some of the youngest ones. Like, I remember this one meeting we had where we didn't have a warehouse. We didn't have a space. And it had been a while, and we were just looking. And this young girl, she was not even 21. She just said, well, why don't we just pick a date and have a game? Let's figure it out. We'll just figure it out. Just pick a date. And I still remember that. And I was like, okay. Because I was thinking everything had to be perfect. Everything had to be in place. And that's why we weren't picking dates, you know? And I was like, Just pick a date and work backwards. And that's what we did. And this, it's, you know, you just keep going.
Well, and the interesting thing is, in dealing with the problems of running Derby Dolls, that's when you became friends with Eric Garcetti, who's now the mayor of Los Angeles, right?
Yeah.
And that kind of led to what you're doing now.
Yes, yes, Yeah,
So
I got involved
there were
in
some
City
blessings
College, but...
in those challenges.
Oh, way more blessings than, and by the way, challenges, while painful, aren't bad necessarily. You know, you just really learn a lot about yourself. You learn a lot about what you can tolerate, what you can work through. And that, you know, your biggest fear might actualize and you'll still get through it.
And I want to tie that actually.
Better.
I want to tie that actually back to your marriage, because this year you were telling me when COVID came out, that really hit your husband's business very hard. And it's almost like you took who you were running Derby Dolls to bring that same kind of resourcefulness to meet the challenge when David's business, when everybody was being laid off.
Yeah. Because you understand that naivete is sometimes your greatest strength. Because if you really knew everything that went into something, you might not ever start. And that was one of the biggest lessons I learned. So yeah, that helped when we had to pivot his clothing company to bringing in, importing and distributing PPE. So yeah.
Which makes this like powerhouse person that you are just the perfect person for this marriage.
Yeah, it's good. Things are good, you know? We're really lucky. By the way, not easy working with your partner. So it might be good, but you know what? It also put an extraordinary strain on the relationship too.
Well, yeah. We have just a couple minutes
left.
We're
working out.
Do you have any tips on that? What are you learning from that? Working with your partner.
Boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, making sure that the recognition is equal. That we're recognizing each other and recognizing the positives, as opposed to, you know, you're not doing this, you're not doing that, why did you do this, why did you do that? Like, oh, you know what, that was really great. And if it wasn't for you, this wouldn't have happened, so I just want to acknowledge that. And really kind of trying to focus on what's been positive about it has really changed the dynamic, you know, because we're, you know, running around with chickens with our heads cut off, like figuring out a brand new business and a brand new business model. And then, you know, and then trying to come together now, we're like, okay, we're really established some deep respect for each other. That helps.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, you work with Devin.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean.
And look at you two, years now.
Yeah, listen, it's a process. But, I mean, I think we get each other, and that goes a really a long way. And I think we both individually have sort of a commitment. And I think this is really important, is that we've made the choice to be together. Do you know what I mean? So it's like when that's the priority, then all the rest of it will figure it out.
And I know we talk about, you know, Devin's guitars and stuff at the beginning of the show, but that helps too. Devin has his little world to release steam, and I have my little world. You have your projects. And so having togetherness and also having space, I think, really helps balance it. Thank you so much, Rebecca. I would love to go on another hour with you.
I love you both so much. You are my hero.
Becksky, I love you.
Oh, Becksky? I love you.
So this has been...
Your kids are amazing.
Thank you. Back at you. I will see you soon.
So
with masks.
Okay.
And so we're going to have this, we'll have the replay of this wonderful.
Love you, Morgana.
Love you. We'll have it available in a day or two. For our listeners, we will be back in a week, Wednesday at 5 p.m., Crazy Sexy Midlife Love.
I was going to say all of that, but not as well.
Thank you. And go to crazysexymidlifelove.com and download Devin's awesome ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men.
Because they are.
and
have a better relationship.
Yeah, go forth and love midlife.
Mwah. It will help.
Yes.
All right, love you guys.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. Please sign up to join our free love family at crazysexymidlifelove.com. To get alerts to live shows, call in and ask questions, or just listen in. And ladies, don't forget to download Devin's free ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men and Other Secrets Marriage-Minded Women Need to Know. Also available at crazysexymidlifelove.com.